You're listening to an LA Kings podcast. For more episodes of this and every other Kings program, visit lakings.com/podcast.
You're listening to All the Kings Men, the official podcast of the LA Kings. Now, here's your host, Jesse Cohen.
When it comes to a starting lineup, everybody loves the starter from Jack Black. Loaded with the superior skincare that the pros love, LA Kings fans can get the starter for just $10, shipping included. Available exclusively at getjackblack.com with the code TEAMJB, the starter has four of Jack Black's best-selling skincare and shave products, plus a full-size intense therapy lip balm, SPF 25 in natural mint. Here's to the winning combination of the LA Kings and the starter from Jack Black. $10 plus free shipping, available at getjackblack.com with the code TEAMJB while supplies last. Welcome back, Kings fans. I am Jesse Cohen. This is All the Kings Men. The LA Kings completed an amazing comeback last night against the Anaheim Ducks in the Honda Center. I did not record a post-game podcast last night in Anaheim, but I did record one this morning in my bedroom over Twitter Spaces so that we could take calls, as it were. And we actually got some nice interaction going on, I felt. We're going to be experimenting with that platform and the timing of post-game podcasts as the season progresses. But for now, here's my conversation about last night and the rest of the preseason. I guess it's really more of a monologue than a conversation, but here it is anyway. We're going to talk about the last two games and maybe the entire preseason as a whole, because there's a lot of ground to cover. And last night's game was so much fun that I did feel guilty, actually, that I didn't record a post game. Had it been a regular season game, I absolutely would have done it. Especially with a hat trick like that from Arthur Kaliev, we got a chance, a rare opportunity in the post game to see Arthur Kaliev's personality, which was fun. Kid starting to open up a little bit more. I guess we'll start off right off the bat with the disappointing outcome or the disappointing takeaway of Tuesday night's game, which is that Quentin Byfield got hurt. And the really painful part about that was that just prior to him being injured in that game, the conversation in the press box was everybody sort of looking at each other, shrugging and saying, well, that's that. That kid has earned a spot on the lineup. There's no way you send him down to Ontario. At this point, he looked great. He looked fantastic. He was compelling. He was dynamic. He was all over the place. And then obviously the injury occurs. So that is that's a bummer on multiple fronts, not just for him, but not just for the organization, but for fans as well. So we hope that his recovery is speedy and relatively simple, because getting Quentin Byfield back into the NHL at this point is going to be a ton of fun. Now, I've been looking over some of the, not a super deep dive, but just looking back at the preseason results so far. And they're six games in, three wins, three losses, and they seem to come in splits. So they'll, you know, win the first game, lose the second one, or lose the first game, win the second one. Going all the way back to that first bundle of games, They lose to the Coyotes, but then beat the Sharks. And they're also all back-to-backs, which I hadn't realized when the schedule was released. Another weird sort of coincidence is they tend to outshoot the opponent and lose, or be outshot by the opponent and win. And hopefully that's something that gets sorted out over time. But when I say outshoot, I guess I shouldn't say outshoot. I should say specify. We're talking about Corsi here, which is... anybody who listens to me knows at this point is just what shots on goal should be. Anyway, game one against the Coyotes, they dominate Corsi 59% and lose 2-1. The next game, they don't. It's the opposite. The Sharks dominate them in Corsi. The Kings only collecting 48% of the shots on target, and yet they win that game 4-3. Then you have the games against Las Vegas. Now, there are no stats tracked, fancy stats anyway, for the game in Utah because... not an NHL building, not sure all the details there, but regardless, they win that first game. Then the second game, despite dominating Corsi against Vegas 60.82%, they lose 4-0, fail to score a goal. And that trend would continue in that first game against the Coyotes at Staples Center, where the Kings utterly arguably outplayed Arizona, and yet still wind up losing 4-1. And then again last night at the Pond, we all know what happened in the first period and most of the second period, frankly. And then, of course, comes that third period push where the Kings do manage to escape with the win. But a bit of a flip-flop in expectations, right? If we were looking at money pucks deserve to win-o-meter, you'd see the reverse outcome of the actual results of these games. Again, if anybody wants to add in a question or a comment, go ahead and request speaker status. I'm happy to have you jump in here and join me this morning. In fact, that's the entire point of that this morning, is not for me to just run my mouth endlessly, but to get some feedback from you guys if you want. And this will be made available later as a downloadable podcast. So you'll get that benefit too. You'll be on an All the King's Men episode for all your friends and family to hear. Anyway, let's get into the last two games, because that's really what I wanted to talk about. We mentioned the Byfield injury. But that was not the only sort of disappointing, wacky thing about that game. You also had, I don't know, five or six posts hit. I see Jarrett and the King's Realm and Russell from Hockey Royalty in here with me if you guys want to weigh in on how many posts got hit. And there was also a broken stick, I think, from Adrian Kempe. You had the injury that happened to the linesman before the game started. It was just a really weird game. And I'd love to just chalk it up to it being the preseason and never think about it again. So one of the nice things about preseason games is you don't have to think about them again, unless, unfortunately, you have an injury like was sustained by Quentin Byfield. But that game, I think a lot of positives can be taken away from that game and from the preseason in general. We heard a lot of talk from the players, from the coaching staff about a shift in systems, a change in philosophy maybe. There was talk that improving the talent pool could then lead to a change in playing system, in focus. And I think with Philip Deneau and Victor Arvidsson and Alex Edler, as a number of people have pointed out, when you bring in talented players, you don't just upgrade the spot that player is brought into. You also sort of exponentially upgrade all the spots behind them in the lineup, because now you've got a player, you know, who maybe was playing out of their depth, slotting into a spot more in line with their skill set, or perhaps even, you know, they're outplaying their position now. And that's what we saw in 2011-12. All of a sudden you brought in players, you know, all of a sudden Mike Richards was your second line center and Jarrett Stoll now was your third line center, whereas previously Jarrett Stoll was being asked to sort of split duties depending on where he was in the lineup. You know, Mike Richards wasn't there. Then of course you pick up Jeff Carter and all of a sudden it just begins a cascade sort of waterfall effect. And so now, as we've seen, you bring in Philippe Deneau, you play Kopitar and Deneau on the top two lines, and suddenly now your third line doesn't have to shoulder the responsibility of being effective in the faceoff dot or in the defensive zone. Not that they're not expected to, but it's not up to them. And now all of a sudden your fourth line, the much maligned, unfairly fourth line containing guys like Austin Wagner and Trevor Moore. Well, now anything that line does that doesn't hurt you, as far as I'm concerned, is money in the bank. And I do want to sort of focus on that, because I've been mulling over for the last two or three days the differences between a player who maybe marginally helps your team versus doesn't hurt your team at all versus does hurt your team. And I think a lot of people, fans, coaches, scouts, I think it's human nature. I could, you know, getting a little philosophical here this morning. I think it's easy to look at somebody that maybe doesn't help your team the way that you want them to or expect them to. There's that word expect again. Happiness is measured by expectations. It's easy to look at a player like that and say, they're not doing what I hoped or expected. Therefore, they are hurting the cause. And I don't think that's a fair assessment. I think you can have a player who helps the team in different ways, but does not hurt your team. And it's really either there are some basic skill sets that are easy to identify, whether it's scoring a goal or making a hit or blocking a shot. And it's really simple to look at those and identify them as plot points and say, this guy does this, this guy did that, that helped our team in that specific situation. I think it's a lot harder to notice things like, oh, that guy's always in position, or that guy always starts the right breakout play from his own defensive end. If you're not sort of hyper-focused on every moment, on every space in the ice. Anyway, the point of bringing all that up is to say, when you have talented players playing above their roster spot, you know, a guy like Philippe Deneau maybe could be a number one center on a different team, but now we've got Andre Kopitar and Deneau. So now all of a sudden the pressure on the third center and the fourth center is reduced, and all of a sudden what you need from them is reduced, and now all of the ways that they aren't quote-unquote not hurting your team or even helping your team, all of that just increases, and it just makes the team better on the whole. Now it remains to be seen how good this team will be in the regular season, but But those are things that I like to point out. Now, in the second game of the back-to-backs, the one in at the pond, I keep wanting to say the pond, one at the Honda Center last night, we had a sort of opposite thing where in the first period, the Ducks were all over the Kings in the first, what, 10 minutes, 12 minutes. And, you know, Zach Dooley correctly pointed out that I was completely overreacting. My head was in my hands. I was making grumbling noises. I was very disappointed at how that game started out. And I thought to myself, oh boy, this is not great. We heard from Arthur Kaliev and Todd McLellan in the postgame availability that I guess Todd McLellan and the coaching staff made it perfectly clear to the guys how unacceptable that first period effort was. And to their credit, we saw it turn around. The second period still, I think, favored the Ducks, but you could see the changes. You know, it's not easy to turn a cruise ship around, and you could see the game start to tilt in the Kings' favor. And then, of course, in that third period, you had three goals from the Kings. What was it? I think one in the first, two in the second, and three in the third. You always like to see that. They rally back. Arthur Kaliev gets a hat trick, which I believe is his first professional hat trick. I don't know if we're counting it. He didn't seem to think it counted because it was the preseason. Not in a negative way or anything, but as he was headed out the door, we had asked him about the hat trick as the final question. And then, you know, he was free to go. And as he's heading out the door, Carlin just says, like, you know, hey, like, did anybody get the puck for you? And he sort of chuckled and turned over his shoulder and very loosely and lightly just said, I don't know, it's preseason. So it was nice to see that, you know, I don't know if you want to call that humility or just not caring that it was preseason, but either way, as I said before we really started this conversation, it's nice to see Arthur Kaliev's personality. It's nice to see him being more comfortable around the media and around fans and mics and what have you. So not only a hat trick from Arthur Kaliev, but also two really nice plays to set up Alex Turcotte on his goal in the third period. One, he's along the boards and gets the puck up to, I believe, Christian Willan, and I don't actually remember that detail of the play, but he starts the play off by getting the puck to the point. The D-man finds a man down on the left who sends it over to Kaliev, who one-touch passes it back to Turcotte in front, and Turcotte potted it in. And if the puck had not crossed the line a second before it did, or half a second before it did, Arthur Kaliev was there to make sure that it did. As it turns out, it was Turcotte's goal. But the point is, two assists on one goal, as far as I'm concerned, for Arthur Kaliev. Huge game for him. Huge game for Turcotte. You know, it's the preseason, so I don't want to get too crazy here with my praise. But, you know, if you're talking about the kids, the prospects, and the skill is evident. We know about the skill. All of their accomplishments are well documented. But to see them be able to take a 3-0 deficit and turn it around, and on the backs of that fourth line, Lizotte, Moore, and Wagner, and Turcotte, Kaliev, and Kupari, to see them turn that game around and come away with a 6-3 win. And I think it's important that it was 6-3. It wasn't 6-4. It wasn't 6-5. Like, after the third goal the Ducks scored, that was it. They didn't score again. And even though the shot totals heavily favor the Ducks, Cal Peterson turned his game around. The defense turned their game around. Like, at 6-3, you can look at the last 40 minutes of the game and say, okay, that's a different game from the first 20 minutes. And whether or not it was because it was preseason, whether or not it was because the roster was comprised of some kids that were recalled that morning, I think there were six or seven guys who played the night before: Velarde, Anderson, Kachev, Wagner, Moore, Anderson, Walker, Bjornfoot, and Roy. So I guess that's nine players that played the night before in a weird game. Whatever you want to chalk it up to, in 10 minutes of even strength time, Wagner, Lizotte, and Moore controlled 65% of the shot attempts. Lemieux, Anderson, Dolan, and Kupari controlled 50%. So you're getting solid contributions from those two lines. And then Kaliev, Turcotte, and Grundstrom, excuse me, not Kupari. Those guys, this is another one of those cases where the Corsi doesn't mean anything, because they, five Corsi, four, 10 against for 33%. You look at that and you go, not great, but they scored four goals and four really nice goals. I suppose one was sort of a lucky scramble. The goalie lost his boot, couldn't get back in the net, but I think everybody would agree that the puck movement that led to that goal, resulted in the goal. Whereas if they hadn't scored it, you'd go, oh, missed opportunity, that stinks. But you wouldn't think about it because it's preseason. But they didn't miss the opportunity. They in fact scored what looked like a really nice goal. Then you watch the replay and realize what was going on. A bit of a weird night for that Velarde-Anderson-Kachev line. They're a mercurial line, I think, at best. I know there's a lot of hype around that line. I know that Gabriel Velarde carries a lot of expectations with him, and I know that some people are very high on Vladimir Kachev. The kid obviously has skill and talent. I mean, he wouldn't be here if he didn't, but his abilities on ice are evident when you watch him, right? He's an incredibly effective passer. He's 26, so I think part of it is that I forget that he's 26 and has been playing professional hockey for years. I still sort of lump him in my brain with the quote-unquote kids. So I think his poise comes as a bit of a surprise. And his control of himself in game situations. Having said that, that line seems to go back and forth. They're either really effective and you're noticing them everywhere, or at least for my money, they're less effective and maybe less noticeable. Last night on the ice for 4 shot attempts for and 20 shot attempts against. That's a Corsi 4 percentage of 16.67. And if you're not super conversant in fancy stats, that's bad. That is not good. 2 shots for official, 10 shots against. And in the expected goal category, which is a little bit of hoodoo and voodoo, but regardless, they were the worst line out there at 38.41% expected goals for, whereas a line like Kaliev, Turcotte, and Grundstrom, now obviously there's going to be high because they scored, but them at 59.44%. And the other two lines at 63 and 65. So when it comes to quality scoring chances, which I suppose is what expected goals measures, that Velarde, Anderson, and Kachev line not effective last night, which is a shame because the night before, if it wasn't people talking about Quentin Byfield, it was people talking about Gabriel Velarde. Those two players had really good games Tuesday night, and things were looking really positive for the center depth on the Kings moving into the regular season. Now, again, it's one preseason game. A bunch of those guys played back-to-back. You know, Kachev's never played in the NHL in a regular season game yet. Anderson and Velarde are both still young. So we'll cut them some slack, and we'll see what happens in the regular season. There's one more preseason game left for the Kings, but two left for the Reign. Now, I'm planning on going to both games for the Reign, and I'm really hoping I get a chance to see Arthur Kaliev and Alex Turcotte because the two of them seem to be developing chemistry. Now, I don't know how much of that is just my lizard brain wanting very much for that story to continue. You know, we saw them in World Juniors, and now that we've seen them in a season in Ontario together and we've spoken to them and they seem to have a genuine friendship and appreciation for each other. In fact, I find personally that Alex Turcotte's affection for Arthur Kaliev is one of his most endearing qualities to me, anyway, as a hockey player. I love the fact that they don't seem like a natural fit based on personality, and so the fact that Turcotte seems to enjoy Kaliev so much, I quite enjoy. Anyway, the point is I hope to see both of them in Ontario for those games, regardless of whether or not they start the season in Ontario or in LA with the Kings. Watching them is just fun. It turns out watching guys who can shoot the puck like Arthur Kaliev and who can do everything else that Alex Turcotte does, not to imply that Kaliev doesn't do other things, but it's just a ton of fun. And the Quentin Byfield injury, though devastating and disappointing, has really opened up an interesting wrinkle to the end of training camp, which is now, you know, Todd McClellan sort of confirmed last night what a lot of us were saying amongst ourselves, which is Quentin Byfield had all but locked up a roster spot on the LA Kings with his preseason play. He looked great. And now Quentin Byfield no longer has that spot. So those 4 extra guys become 3 extra guys. And if Athanasiu's not available, those 3 extra guys become 2 extra guys. And if Olimata's not available, those 2 extra guys become 1 extra guy. And if you're going to carry 8 defensemen, then you don't need to make any cuts on the blue line. And so the question then is, which of the remaining forwards is that 1 extra guy or 3 extra guys, depending on the health of Athanasiu and Mata? And if you're carrying 1 extra guy, if it's not going to be Byfield, you know, if Lizotte steps into that 4th line center, or do you want to recall Jared Anderson Dolan? Do you want to give Alex Turcotte an extended look? Do you want to keep Rasmus Kupari up? Like, it takes an already sort of subtly complicated problem and introduces a new wrinkle to it. Like I said, my thoughts are, I think at this point, are pretty well known. I tend to the conservative. I tend towards putting, quote, all of the kids into Ontario to play together, to get to know one another, to develop together, to be exposed to Robleski and the rest of the coaching staff and development staff for as long as possible. I think you have a lot of questions that need to be answered still on the roster and on the depth chart. And I'm not sure that those questions can be properly answered if you're loading the roster up with kids, but I'm not the one making those decisions. And I've changed my mind a number of times in the brief period that we've spent in training camp. I definitely changed my mind about Byfield heading into it. I thought to myself, send the kid to Ontario, give him a full year, you know, 20 minutes a night, top responsibility, et cetera. And then through his play, you realize, oh, this kid's ready. It'll be, you know, quicker the better. But there are a ton of free agents on this team, whether restricted or unrestricted. And some of them may have, you know, extended value to the franchise. Some of them may be players that the franchise decides to move on from. But I think you need to really evaluate those players and what they bring. You know, there's some players that have been around for a while. I think you have a longer book on them than some of the other ones. A newer player like Leish Anderson, there's so much talent and so much potential there. I think you really need to take an extended look at what you've got there. And maybe there are some players who play similar roles that have been here a bit longer that you sort of know already. You go, okay, well, that's who that guy is. And we know what the deal there is. Anyway, I see a bunch of listeners. Again, Russell, King's Realm, Brian, anybody in there that I see that I recognize, if you have any questions or comments, perfectly happy to keep talking. I like the sound of my own voice. But if anybody has any questions or just thoughts they want to offer up, go ahead, request listener status. I'm happy to have you join me here. So in the meantime, we'll keep trucking on. Talking about Cal Peterson, because there has been some subtle and some not so subtle pearl clutching about the play of Cal Peterson in the preseason. I'm not one of the pearl clutchers. I tend towards everything I've seen from Cal Peterson in his short career has been positive. And if he's going to have a rough patch or a rough stretch, that's going to happen to any player. And, you know, hey, it's preseason, as far as I'm concerned, is an acceptable rationalization for why, you know, maybe he allowed some goals that caused people's eyebrows to raise. This is a player, regardless of what any one fan thinks, this is a player that the organization is high on. I won't share names or specific comments of people that I've spoken to in the organization, but rest assured, like, that contract he got it's not a show me contract, obviously, at 3 years, $5 million, a year before his current contract ends. They have built his contract structure and their expectations around him on the expectation that he will be not just the starting goalie, but a very good, if not excellent, if not elite starting goalie. And I understand that his development curve has taken a little bit longer than other goalies have, certainly in the Kings in the past. But one of the things I find myself doing, and one of the things that I see trending in conversations online, is a tendency to compare what's happening on the Kings right now with what happened to the Kings from 2006 to 2012 on that short upward, you know, rise to not just cup contender status, but cup winner status. And I always want to sort of weigh in and pump the brakes and say, that was an incredibly rare situation and an incredibly wonderful situation. And there's no reason that any other 5-year period or 6-year period should mirror exactly what happened to the Kings in that stretch. And so a guy like Jonathan Quick, the first legitimate, you know, franchise goalie that the Kings have ever had, he broke into professional hockey in an era where smartphones had not yet been introduced and social media didn't exist. And so there wasn't any buzz about Jonathan Quick. There wasn't any fan conversation around Jonathan Quick. Was you and your buddy, you know, who maybe knew who he was or maybe didn't. I don't know how many people knew what the Reading Royals were back in 2006, but Jonathan Quick spent some time, not a ton, in the ECHL. He was on the Manchester Monarchs. The Kings had Jonathan Bernier. You know, there was no expectation that Jonathan Quick would wind up being the guy. Russell Morgan joining me right now as we wait for him to connect there. Russell, how are you doing?
Doing good, Jesse. Happy Thursday. Good morning.
Yeah, happy Thursday. What did you think of the game last night?
Interesting start. Obviously, getting off to a 3-0 deficit to the Ducks coming off of just the night before losing Quinton Byfield to the injury. It was kind of like, oh, well, from bad to worse, I guess, at that point.
But then, it didn't feel great.
Yeah, exactly. So to see that, and I'm sure going into the first period, but I mean, that Austin Wagner goal right at the end, that was kind of a good way to end the period, I guess, on a better note. It was just a great play by a player who's kind of been maligned a little bit and kind of unrightfully so. I mean, he's almost like that home run hitter that he can bring those plays. And it's just unfortunate that most of the time he hasn't really been able to finish those plays. But I mean, lately we've kind of seen more and more that if he is able to finish those kind of partial breakaways or those breakaways he's able to get, whether it be shorthanded or 4-on-4 or even strength, I mean, that's just an added, skill or benefit that the Kings would have in the bottom six. So that was good to see. And then also going into the break, I'm sure Todd, like you mentioned, kind of gave him a little bit more.
Sounds like it.
yeah, exactly. Kind of roughed him up a bit in the locker room. So you could see the way they came out. I wanted to mention or tweet about it. Like the first couple minutes in the second period, they just started skating. It was just more skating ability, more. They were more on pucks and just a lot quicker on the ice. So just for them to come back and score 600 unanswered goals, that was just good to see. So, and with Arthur Kaliev and Alex Turcotte continuing that chemistry that they built from the World Juniors, and to have them kind of bring that chemistry to the rain and now during preseason, during training camp, that's just great to see. I wanted to touch on, you had mentioned the Vilardi line. It's weird because, yeah.
Wait, you want to talk about the Kachev line? That's so shocking.
So strange to me. Yeah. But no, but it's weird because on Tuesday, we really got the first full look of Kopitar and Danault playing together.
Yep.
And that kind of, it was almost like that kind of solidified all three lines and where Vilardi would play. I mean, last season, he had a real roller coaster year. And there was a lot of high expectations, I guess you can say, of him coming into camp with how he ended the 2020 season. I think it was 10 points in 7 games. And then coming into his first really full rookie season, there's a lot of expectations for him. And now that he's actually being played in a position where I think he can succeed more as like more of a third line setter with Danault and Kopitar ahead of him, I think there's a little bit more benefit for him there. And we kind of saw that on Tuesday because, like you had mentioned, if Quinton Byfield hadn't gone down, we'd be talking about Gabe Vilardi than the game he had that night. So for last night's game, to see him and Kachev and Anderson playing on more of like a first line role, you kind of saw that really wasn't where they should be playing. I mean, you had the Ducks playing Zegras, Ryan Getzlaff, Max Kontaveit. I mean, they were pretty much playing a lot of their starters going into the season. So they were going up against some heavy competition. So I think now going forward, when we see Vilardi and Anderson and Kachev playing on that third line role with Danault and Kopitar ahead of them, I think they're going to be a lot more productive, and I'm hoping to see a lot more out of them coming. We'll see how it starts in the beginning of the year, I guess.
I'm going to ask you an opinion question because it's something that I've been sort of focusing on a lot in my head for the last day or two. Do you think that Jared Anderson Dolan qualifies as a prospect?
I think so. It's weird because, I mean, last year is like players really, it's not, I don't really count it as a full season. I mean, it's, and with all everything going on in terms of COVID protocol and the taxi squad, is just really a unique year. So these prospects really haven't gotten their first full look in the NHL. I mean, like, and so Jared Anderson Dolan is a perfect example of that. I mean, he really played a lot of the season with the Kings. But with everything that was going on, he hasn't really experienced full, like, barns, full of fans. He hasn't gone to those visitor arenas and seen those full rivalries, like, with fans in the building. So it's kind of tough for me to gauge how those players are going to do going forward coming into the season. But I still think of him as a prospect, I guess, just a long-winded answer here.
No, that's fine. It is, in fact, a trick question, and I'm glad that you answered it the way you did, because Jared Anderson Dolan was drafted in 2017. And so were Gabe Vilardi and Leish Anderson. But because Gabe Vilardi and Leish Anderson have slightly more NHL experience than Jared Anderson Dolan, I feel like the conversation around those three players is totally different. And I'm not entirely sure that it's fair, because Rasmus Kupari was drafted in 2018. And I'm very quickly trying to find the difference in birthdays here real quick between Gabriel Vilardi. Gabriel Vilardi was born August 16th, 1999. And Rasmus Kupari was born March 15th, 2000. Now, if I'm not mistaken, that's less than 6 months apart. but somehow Kupari is a quote-unquote kid. And Vilardi and Leish Anderson are like seasoned veterans who are failing to live up to expectations, according to some, not necessarily the coaching staff of the organization. But when you have that line of Gabriel Vilardi, Leish Anderson, and Vladimir Kachev, again, Kachev just turned 26, so he's not a kid, but you have three guys who are very new to this league. Kachev, incredibly new. And so I think it's really important to remember that we sort of group these players into different, you know, groups, for lack of a better word, in our minds, based on sort of weird conditions that maybe don't have anything to do with anything. Sorry, I'm realizing it's not 6 months. It's, I think, what, 7 months between March 2000 and August 1999. So, you know, it's a lot like when people look at Quentin Byfield and they say, you know, he's 2 weeks younger than, you know, Lafreniere was when he joined the league last year or something like that. Like, these are still kids. And in my mind, any player that's still waiver eligible is a prospect. You know, there's a reason that waivers have a window that closes at some point, where you can no longer hide a player in the minors, where you must expose him to other teams. And part of it is to protect the rest of the league from teams that want to hoard talent. And part of it is just recognizing that guys need time to develop, and Gabriel Vilardi is still waiver eligible, and still needs time to develop. This is a long-winded way of saying I agree with you. But what did you think last night of Arthur Kaliev and Alex Turcotte?
It's impressive. And it's funny, because I think Arthur Kaliev, correct me if I'm wrong here, I think he only actually had three shots on goal. So for him to score on all three of those shots, I mean, that's exactly what he brings. He's a goal scorer, and he's really a unicorn that the Kings have really never had. I mean, I think in their entire franchise, and as terms of being drafting a player who is primarily that goal scorer in the NHL, he's a sniper. I mean, we saw the shot on his second goal. I mean, the first shot, make of it what you will, with Solars' blade coming off the runner and whatever. But I mean, that second shot, that's exactly what we can bring. His shot is just NHL ready, and probably it's probably the best shot in the Kings organization right now. So it's just tough right now, because you want to see, and I'm sure Kings fans all over too want to see Kaliev make an impact on the NHL roster this season. And I'm still a little reserved for that, because it's tough, because I don't want to see him just thrust into a fourth line role where he's getting like 8 to 10 to 12 minutes a game. I think if you give him one more season, I guess, with the rain, I don't think that's really going to hinder him at all. And I think that would be more of a benefit for him, because I would like to see him come up to the Kings and play on like a fourth or second line role. And it's just hard, because you don't really see that a position really open for him right now. So I don't know. It's with Kaliev, I think there's a lot of decision-making that the Kings will have to make in terms of where they can place him to the start of the season. Maybe they give him a couple games. I don't think the entry level contract's going to kick in the season, no matter what. So there's really no slight eligibility there, but it's just looking forward to seeing what he can bring in the NHL and his goal scoring ability. But as far as Turcotte, you watch them play the Ducks, and it's like, you see all the things that Trevor Zegras is doing, and you notice they play in the same round, or they're drafted in the same round. You're like, you want to see Turcotte make those type of plays. I mean, they're really two different players, really. I mean, Turcotte's more of that. He's going to be in on pucks and just constantly doing a lot of the dirty work and getting plays and setting up pucks to a player like Kaliev. So they're two different players. But I still think Turcotte would be ready to make an impact on the NHL roster this season more than Kaliev would. And it's just because of the game he plays. if you do put him on the fourth line, I think he can bring a certain element of grit and tenacity. And those words were kind of mentioned a lot during the rookie faceoff weekend from King's staff and Robleski when noticing Turcotte play. When he gets comfortable and when he gets going, it's kind of hard to stop him. And it seems like he thrives in those. He's the type of player that would thrive in like big game situations. If you notice when the game was kind of close and it was like 3-3, that's when him and Cali just really started going, and they were doing a lot more clean passes in play and offensive zone and doing a lot more of that. So it's just hard because I want to see both of those players make an impact, and I'm sure Kings fans do as well, make an impact on the Kings roster sooner rather than later. But I think it's just another real, you have to just have to be patient with them. And I think there's still a little bit of grooming that has to be done with those players before they can make that jump.
Yeah, I don't know why, but I have never been interested in the comparison between Zegras and Alex Turcotte. We're talking about...
Yeah, I don't neither of I. I think just people have just making that, yeah, I mean, just because of the drafted year that they came out in.
But I don't know. For some reason, it always sort of causes me to roll my eyes. We're talking about preseason Kings games, last two games specifically. Caro, I see you in there. Anybody else that wants to ask a question or give their thoughts, feel free to request speaker status. We'll get you up here talking real quick. I wanted to finish my thought about Cal Peterson earlier, though, Russ. And I thank you for hopping on with me real quick. Talking about there we go. Talking about Cal Peterson earlier and his new contract and the fact that, you know, they brought him in 2017, which to my mind was the first official move, not official, but first unofficial move of the rebuild, or what I've begun calling in my own mind the build. I don't think they're rebuilding. I think they're building something new. The new version of the Kings will not be built on the bones of the old Kings. It will feature some materials, some similar materials, but I don't think that this is a rebuild. In my mind, a rebuild is when you have a couple key, you know, a rebuild in my mind is the difference between the 2010 Chicago Blackhawks and the 2015 Chicago Blackhawks. I don't think this is going to be that situation. Like I said, there may be some players who cross over from the old Kings and the new Kings, but in my mind, what they're building is a completely new thing. And so in 2017, I believe the first move that Rob Blake made as general manager was getting Cal Peterson. And they have slow played his progression over that course of time. Part of that is, you know, maybe developing. Part of that is, you know, Jonathan Quick still being an effective goaltender, right? They win the Jennings in 2018, I think it was. So, you know, obviously you want to maximize your value from all of your available players. And then the contract that the previous contract that he signed, the one he's still under, was clearly structured. I don't know if they made an agreement, although I think it's on the record that they did. But it was clearly structured so that his first year, it was understood that he would not be given a really legitimate opportunity to grab any sort of starting position. Jack Campbell was still in the organization. And then over 3 years, the money that he would make in the minors versus the money he would make in the NHL was tweaked. It was like on a slider, right? So you started to see, okay, if he's still in the AHL in year three of this contract, he's going to get paid a ton of money because, right, they didn't expect him to be there. They expected him to be on the Kings roster. And now this season, I think it's been pretty clear from the coaching staff and from anybody who would talk about it that the expectation certainly is that this season, Cal Peterson will play more than 50% of the games. To Todd McLellan's point, you still need two very good goalies. Gone are the days where you would have one goalie play 72 games. And obviously Jonathan Quick is incredibly capable. Jonathan Quick, the most important player in Kings history, still incredibly capable of giving you strong minutes and winning you big games. So we're not declaring anybody, the overwhelming starter in net, but this is the year. You know, there are a few things that have to happen this year. And one of them is that Cal Peterson has to quote unquote arrive. Has to demonstrate his ability to not only play more than 50% of the games as he did last season, but play them convincingly, effectively. And I am hesitant to say that I expect the team to make the playoffs because there are too many things out of their control that would have to happen in order for them to make the playoffs. And I don't like lumping responsibility or expectations on people or organizations for things that are out of their control. But I think the sort of settling point I have come to is, if a month before the trade deadline, there's still conversation about what kind of team the Kings are. Are they buyers? Are they sellers? Which are overly simplistic, terms. But if a month out from the trading deadline, the fate of the Kings season is not decided, that's what I'm looking for. Because we have no idea how good Seattle's going to be. Vancouver and Calgary, you could tell me they're going to win the division. You could tell me they're going to finish last. Either way, I wouldn't be terribly surprised. There are so many different variables in both of those teams. That's three different teams in a division that everybody already expects Vegas and Edmonton to finish 1 and 2 in. And I think the consensus is that the Central Division will have five teams make the playoffs and the Pacific will have three, although that's certainly not written in stone. So anyway, the point is there's too many things to go right or wrong for the Kings for me to say like, oh, that is definitely a playoff team or that is definitely not a playoff team. I could absolutely see them qualifying for the playoffs. There's a version of reality where Arvidsson has a bounce back offensive year. Philip Deneau has more points than expected. His defensive contributions free up Andre Kopitar to score, more points. Dustin Brown maintains the pace he was on last year. Vladimir Kachev, wins the rookie of the year like Russell thinks he will. There are a million different things that could happen. And yet there are a million things that could go the opposite way. Or there are a million things like that for other teams, right, that I just mentioned. Brock Besser could explode into an incredible player for Vancouver. Just got note, by the way, that the LA Kings have made multiple player transactions today. The roster is now at 28 players, 17 forwards, 9 defensemen, 2 goalers. Jared Anderson Dolan, Samuel Fogamo, Jacob Ingham, Arthur Kelly, Rasmus Kupari, Jordan Spence, and Alex Turcotte have been loaned to the Ontario Reign. No surprises there. Those are the guys who were called up yesterday. They returned back to the Reign. And selfishly, like I said, I hope to see Alex Turcotte, and Arthur Kaliev play in Ontario tonight. I will be definitely heading out to that game because I wasn't really planning on spending a lot of time talking about this, but I'll just touch on it now since I brought it up. I stuck around for a couple Reign practices when I was Toyota Sports Center. Sports Performance Center. Stuck around for a few Reign practices, and these are the lines that I noticed. Doesn't mean that these will be the lines going into the season, but these are guys that I saw skating together. Kaliev, Turcotte, Kupari, Madden, Anderson Dolan, and Fogamo, Adam Johnson, TJ Tynan, and Martin Furk. Those are three pretty good lines, or should be pretty good lines anyway. If your fourth line is some rotation of Brett Sutter, Aiden Dudas, Jacob Doty, Brett Kemp, Johan Södergren, Braden Burke, Nikita Pavlichev, and whoever the extra players are that wind up there from Kings camp, because the Kings still have cuts to make. I don't know the landscape of the AHL well enough to make any sort of meaningful prediction of like, well, that's a Calder Cup winning team. I don't know. I have no idea how good the AHL teams are or how good an AHL team needs to be in order to win the Calder Cup. But I'll assume that like all sports, once you make the playoffs, you have a shot. And certainly that team that I just listed off has a ton of guys who have won at multiple levels and been very effective at the AHL level. And I will just say, I think 7 of 9 Pacific teams make the playoffs this year for the AHL. I am expecting the Ontario Reign season to be a ton of fun for Kings fans and for Reign fans. So I'm going out to Ontario tonight, and I'm planning on going to the Honda Center on Monday, I think it is, for their game, both against the Gulls. And I am very, very excited to watch both of those. I think I am going to wrap it up now. I've been yakking for almost 40 minutes now by myself. Last chance. If anybody wants to weigh in, any questions or comments before I wrap this up, Russell, if you want to hop back in, feel free. Anybody, go ahead, request listener status or speaker status. Excuse me. We'll sort of burn through these. I see a bunch of people in here. Otherwise, I'm just going to say one more preseason game to go. And oh, here we go. We got Alex real quick. Alex, how are you doing? As it waits to connect you. There we go. How are you doing, Alex?
Good. How's it going, Jesse?
Excellent. Thank you.
So didn't get to watch much of the game. Was watching the Dodgers, but I watched the condensed game.
Big win
game
for the Dodgers, though, right?
Oh, it was. Yeah, great game.
Can I just throw in real quick before we get to you? Alex?
Sure.
Sorry. There was a group of Ducks fans right in front of me at the game last night, And I had been, you know, moving my head back and forth, checking the Dodgers game. This was on a TV in the press box. And one little stretch, I stopped checking the Dodgers game. But the group of Ducks fans in front of us were so upset at the outcome. That's how I learned that the Dodgers won and quickly spun my head around. I was very tickled at how unhappy the Ducks fans were. Sorry, go ahead, Alex.
Oh, gosh. Ducks fans rooting against the Dodgers. That's a tough fan base right there.
It was great. It was
great. So I was wondering how you thought Velarde has been looking so far in the preseason, playing against some NHL-level guys on the Ducks. Yeah, wondering how you thought he looked last night and in general.
He's an interesting dude, is Velarde, because he's clearly got talent, right? I'm not a huge proponent of wasting a bunch of my time watching clips of guys in junior or lower levels of competition and then trying to extrapolate what he's going to look like. But if you watch, you know, highlight clips of Gabe Velarde in the juniors, and I have, his ability is evident, right? You know, he can stick handle in a phone booth when he wants to, and he can make passes that I'm not sure other players even see as options. And at his peak, you look at Gabe Velarde and you go, wow, I understand completely why that guy was pegged to be a top five draft pick prior to reports of his injury. Then there are other games where I don't necessarily notice him at all. And that's fine. You know, as I was talking about with Russell, he's still in my mind a prospect, still only drafted in 2017. He's still incredibly young. But there's obviously a ton of expectation and pressure on him from the organization. And I'm not sure how much of that is because of his draft stock. And I'm not sure how much of that is just because he was the first round pick they had in a 2 or 3 year window. I've been talking about this a lot lately, but I think, if I'm not mistaken, Adrian Kempe was the Kings' first-round pick in 2014 and was a late first-round pick because they won the Cup. They didn't have a first-round pick in 2015. They didn't have a first-round pick in 2016. And then Gabe Velarde is their first-round pick in 2017. And then we don't really get a chance to look at him, you know, or track his progress for a year and a half, 2 years, because of his injury and the recovery time. And so There's just sort of built up anticipation, I think, whereas it had the Kings had other first round picks, or had he played a full, you know, junior's career and then slowly transitioned to the AHL, I think maybe expectations would be a little bit more reasonable for Gabriel Velarde. Sorry, that's not really answering your question, so I'll try and answer it directly. When he has looked good in the preseason, he has looked as good as anybody else. You know, on Tuesday night, I think I said there were two people that everyone was talking about before Quentin Byfield got hurt. It was Quentin Byfield and Gabriel Velarde. He looked confident. He looked engaged. He looked aggressive. Now, last night was the second night of back-to-backs. They were playing, you know, top-line minutes. And so, you know, the competition was a lot more difficult for that line. They played 14 minutes at even strength last night. And I'm going to really quickly pull up his opposition numbers because I probably should have done this earlier. It's an excellent question, Alex. I'm going to try and pull it up right now. So Gabriel Velarde played 9 minutes and 57 seconds and 9 minutes and 52 seconds against Hampus Lindholm and Jamie Drysdale. And the forward matchups were pretty spread out for that line. But no, I think, especially with the addition of Philip Deneau, I think using Velarde as a third line center, reducing sort of the difficulty of competition and removing a lot of the pressure of expectation for him and for that line, I think will really help him. I see Randon McMahon is requested. So Alex, I'm going to take you off, but thank you very much for the question. And I appreciate that you were watching that Dodgers game.
Yeah. Thanks, Jesse. If I could just squeeze one there. Who had the letters last night?
I should know the answer to that off the top of my head. I don't, but Dooley pointed it out. So I think if you go through Zach's timeline on Twitter, I think you should be able to figure that out. I'm sorry that I don't
have the
answer to that off the top of my head. Thanks, Alex. Appreciate it.
Yep. Thanks. Go Kings, go.
Go Kings, go. Indeed. All right. Randon McMahon, excuse me. We're going to go ahead and get to you in a second as it waits to connect you. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing fantastic. How are you doing?
I'm excellent. Thank you.
Yeah, a lot of philosophy with lines is finding a good pair and then, you know, trying to plug and play a third person in there. It looks like Deneau and Iafallo seem to be that pair for the second line. And those being two very consistent players on an all-around basis, they've been playing with Kempe lately. Do you think that'll make him more of a consistent player throughout the year? Because you see him flash and then go away. In your opinion, from what you've seen, do you think that'll make him a more consistent scorer and for the Kings this year?
No, because I maybe differ from the official organization's position on this. I should stress that this is my own personal opinion. I think Adrian Kempe's strengths, although he does possess a great shot, and I think when he came in and joined Ontario early in his career, I think he finished up one season playing 14 games with Ontario or something like that. Now I have to look it up or I'll drive myself crazy. But when he came in, he would, you know, fly down the wing and rip off a shot, and you'd look and you'd go, oh, he's fast and he can shoot. And that's great. That's what he does. For my money, the things that Adrian Kempe does consistently, are not scoring. I think he can score more, but I don't think that is necessarily his bag. Excuse me, it was 13 goals, 17 games with Manchester. It wasn't in Ontario. At the end of the 2014-15 season, he played three regular season games and then played 17 games with Manchester in the playoffs, scoring 8 goals. And so I think everybody was like, oh, he's a goal scorer. That's what he does. To me, Adrian Kempe, my favorite use of Adrian Kempe has always been, and I know people get tired of this, but Adrian Kempe, Blake Lizotte, and Austin Wagner. And my attitude was always, I don't care if they ever score a single goal. The three of them disrupt offense from the opponent and keep the puck in the opponent's zone the whole time. And a player like Philip Deneau and Alex Iafallo, while Iafallo has, I think, more offensive ability than people identify, and I think Deneau does as well, that's an incredibly effective defensive line. And I don't mean defense just exclusively in terms of blocking shots and you know, lifting sticks in the crease and sort of the very obvious visible elements of defense. I mean, you know, I think somebody, it was one of the analytics accounts, I don't remember which one, but one of them was pointing out that if you somehow manage to play Kopitar, Iafallo, and Deneau on a line together, just based on their sort of defensive fancy stat numbers, nobody would ever score on them again. And so, while obviously Adrian Kempe is not a Selke-level player the way Andrei Kopitar is, that line, I think, will dominate scoring chances in an insane way. Any offense you get out of Adrian Kempe, from my perspective, is a bonus. I think a lot of his offense last season came on the special teams, on the power play. I don't, unfortunately, have those numbers pulled up right now, but I'm going to trust my memory to say that that's true. I anticipate, and I could be wrong, but I actually anticipate Alex Iafallo being moved back to the line with Kopitar and Brown. That's not based on any conversations or anything I've heard. I just believe in inertia and momentum, and so my thought is that Victor Arvidsson will wind up skating with Kempe and Deneau. And to your question, Randon, I actually think that might be what results in Adrian Kempe becoming a more offensive player. But I'm curious what you think about it.
Yeah, I think that you look at when, you know, Corsi 4, obviously more opportunities and everything like that. And both Iafallo and Kempe, you know, have put a lot of effort into executing their shot more, as they've said in the offseason, and, you know, putting in that work. I think that last year you looked at Kempe played a lot with Vilardi, and having, you know, a player being the 2C that early in his career, you know, can lead to inconsistencies. And so when you have an established center in Deneau and a guy that, you know, drives a lot of Corsi 4 and gives more opportunities to that line, I think you're right. The opportunities will be there, and it's going to be up to Kempe to finish. I think there should be more total offense from that line as a whole than there was on the second line last year.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you in general. And I, as I was saying it, I began to feel like maybe I was maligning Adrian Kempe's offensive abilities. I certainly didn't mean to do that, but yeah, you hope that, you know, as I was saying at the top there, you hope that more offense added to any line creates that waterfall effect and creates more opportunities and easier minutes for other players, which leads to more offense, which, you know, it just becomes a snake eating its own tail. Well, that's not the right metaphor, but you know what I mean. The easier it gets, the easier it gets, for lack of a better way of saying it. Anyway, I think I am going to wrap it up now because we're reaching the hour mark and I actually have stuff to do and I want to edit this and throw it up so people who are not joining us can listen to this. Thank you, Russell. Thank you, Alex. Thank you, Randon, for joining me. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Two more preseason games for the Reign, one more preseason for the Kings, and you guys get so close. It's right around the corner. I'm going out of my brain. I was so excited to go to Staples Center the other night. I had to sort of remind myself it's preseason. You have to get this amped up for the first regular season game. Otherwise, you're boring. So anyway, that is going to wrap it up. I've been Jesse Cohen. This has been our first experimental post-game pod the morning after. Not sure how much energy or time there will be for these sorts of things in the regular season, but theoretically, this is going to be it moving forward. We're going to do post-game pods the next morning. Let me know if this was too late in the morning, if you'd prefer it earlier in the morning. If you want regular guests, any feedback you have, go ahead, tweet it at me, DM me, whatever. And as I said, thanks for joining. And go Kings go.